Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. So glad to have you along with us for this week's show. If you are new here, welcome. Very glad to have you along with us. Please take a minute and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or whatever their podcasting one is. Pretty much everywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find us over there. So please do that. If you're returning, thank you so much. So glad to have you back with us. Thank you for sharing about Christian Historical Fiction Talk with your family and friends. I do appreciate it. Also, you can find Christian Historical Fiction Talk on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter. We are all on social media there. I've been a little quiet because I have been on deadline for my next book, but as soon as I get that turned in, then we'll pick up and we enjoy some really good conversations over there. It's another great way to get informed when new episodes release. And finally, if you would like to support the podcast, then please head over to Patreon and consider supporting the podcast in that way. There are monthly giveaways. You can ask the author a question. You can get a shout out on the podcast, all kinds of things. So be sure to check that out over there. Okay, we have a returning guest today in Kathleen Denley. She was here earlier to talk about, I believe it was the third book in her Chaparral Hearts series. And so she returns today with her new book, Murmur in the Mud Caves. Welcome to the show, Kathleen. It's really good to have you back with us.
It's good to be here.
I was really excited looking ahead to this and seeing you coming up with your new book, Murmur in the Mud Caves. That's sort of a tongue twister there almost. It's book 4, correct, in the Chaparral Hearts series?
Correct. It is the 4th full-length novel in the series.
Okay. That's what I thought. So I remember talking about the 3rd book, I think it was a year or so ago, and now you're out with the 4th one, Murmur in the Mud Caves. But before we get to that, for those listeners who maybe forgot or who haven't met you before, can you just introduce yourself to them?
Sure. I am the happily married mother of 4 kids. I homeschool them as well, and I write historical Christian romance, primarily set in Southern California in the 1800s.
Wow, interesting. I think there are a lot of people who do Western romance, and I have a few questions about that, but they tend to be like Colorado or Wyoming or Montana or something like that, even Northern California, but we don't get a lot of Southern California during that time. So that's a little bit of a different spin that you put on those.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about writing in this area. Not only is it unique to the genre, but also it's where I was living for the past 20 years or so. We recently moved to Central California, but I was living in San Diego County for about 20, 22 years. And I fell in love with the local history there, and I wanted to share it with readers.
It is fascinating. My son just moved to the San Diego area, and I'm really looking forward to going out there and visiting him and learning a little bit more about the area. But I've been to San Diego before, really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a wide range of things to see here. There's coastal, there's mountains, there's chaparral valleys, there's desert. It's got quite a range of environments to explore.
Oh, I know. I was recently talking to him. He's like, Mom, you've got to come out here. I've got this and this and this and this to show you. So I don't think we'll be bored when we go out to visit him. So, like I mentioned, your new book is Murmur in the Mud Caves. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this book?
Yeah, so this book is set in eastern San Diego County. We're finally getting to the desert portion of the county. And I really enjoyed getting to delve into the idea of what it would be like for a man in that era to have a chronic health condition, which impacted his ability to fulfill the typical expected role of a man. In particular, this hero is a rancher by birth. He like was raised on a ranch. However, at the time of the book starting, he is looking to work strictly as a cook on a ranch. He wants nothing to do with all the hard physical labor because he feels that his health condition makes him a danger to those around him in that environment. However, when he arrives in California, he finds that the rancher he intended to work for has been killed and the ranch been burned to ashes, and the only one on the property is a single woman. And she wants nothing to do with him, but he sticks around to make sure she's safe. And in the meantime, two more single women show up, and he's like, well, what am I going to do now? I can't just leave these three women in the middle of the desert. I feel like I have to stay and protect them and help them, even though I'm not really the best equipped, but they won't accept help from anyone else. So yeah, it's quite a fun premise to work through. And then the heroine, she's got some issues related to her adoption. The reason she comes out to the desert is because she was contacted by her birth sibling, whom she has not had contact with for about 18 years. And so she finally hears from her and she decides, I'm going to go out there and get some answers.
It is a really interesting premise and a little bit different spin on the Western romance. What in the first place led you to write Western romances? What is the allure and the attraction beyond just living there? Like, for example, Sarah Sundin lives out west and she writes World War II. So what draws you to writing the Western romance?
Oh, quite a few things. I mean, I've always been a huge Mary Keneally fan, along with Karen Whitmire and Regina Jennings. They've all been like big influences in my writing journey. And then I just really love adventure. And personally, I really enjoy hiking. My first job, other than babysitting, was working for the Youth Conservation Corps, actually, in Joshua Tree National Park. And I went to high school in the high desert. So I had quite a bit of background to help me flesh out the setting for this particular story. And I've even worked with building things out of stone, which is something my characters do in the book. Now, they're not, I didn't go to high school in the same high desert that this book is set, but I did take a week-long trip down to that area to flesh out my thorough understanding of the setting there. So yeah, there's a lot of things that have gone into my choice to write novels set in San Diego County, and particularly Western adventures. I just feel like I have that in me. Like, one of the jobs I considered when I was younger was becoming a flight attendant. I've always loved traveling and I enjoy hiking. And so adventure is just kind of part of who I am.
Oh, that's always so interesting to talk to authors and find out how their life experiences have affected what they write and how they write. So it's super interesting that you're adventuresome and that really comes through in your writing.
Yeah, one of the best things I got to do during my research trip to the desert where this is set, which is the Anza Borrego Desert, is I got to actually explore the mud caves, which are part of the title. And it's just, it's such a unique feature. I'm not aware of it anywhere else in the world. And most of the readers have mentioned in their review that they'd never even heard of them. So it was really fun to get to use something so unique in a story.
And I have never heard of them before either. So can you explain to us a little bit, what are these mud caves?
Sure. So I'm not a geologist or a scientist, so bear with me with my layman's terms. But essentially, there are mountains of mud which are dry unless it's raining. And when it rains, then they start to drip. So if you can picture like a melting candle, but mud, kind of like that. And then in the process of that, they form slot canyons and mud arches and mud caves. So it's a completely different type of cave than I think most of us are used to. They are also somewhat dangerous. You don't want to explore them alone, especially during the rainy season when they are more prone to collapse. You also don't want to walk on the top of them, because it's like walking on a frozen lake that you can't see through. You might think you're stepping on solid, compact layers and layers and layers of mud, and you might be, or you might be stepping on a layer of mud that's about half an inch thick, and then you fall down. And more than one person has died as a result of not being as cautious as maybe they might have been in hindsight.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. That does sounds really, really interesting. Were you able to go into any of them when you were doing your research?
I did. I went into one of the caves. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to do more than that. I explored a long slot canyon and got to see firsthand several tunnels and arches, but it took us a really long time to find the first real big cave. We found a couple of small ones, but to find the first real big one took most of the day because they're not marked. They're not signed. You kind of have to explore and find them. And by the time we got there, it was getting closer to the end of the day and we couldn't spend a whole lot of time exploring it. One, because I was only there with my two older children. Well, my two middle children, actually. And so I didn't want to go too far in just in case something was unstable. And then two, it was getting to the end of the day and we needed to head out. And it takes a long time just to even reach the mud caves. You have to get there driving through really deep sandy washes. And I don't recommend it for two-wheel, four-door cars. If you've got a higher level, like we took a Jeep Patriot. Now it's only two wheels, but I have a lot of experience because of my, again, growing up in the high desert, I have a lot of experience driving in sand. So I knew how to navigate it. And we also had recovery boards with us just in case we did get stuck. But yeah, we had to take off before I could do too much more exploring, but it was plenty enough for me to flesh out my scenes.
Oh, that's really neat. I love that kind of research and being able to do something like that. And I grew up, I spent the first 9 years of my life in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I remember more than one car getting stuck in the sand on our street. So I know about those boards. And my dad got pretty good at getting people out of the sand. So yeah.
Yeah. Experience is definitely a big factor in that.
For sure. For sure. Now, this is the fourth book in the series, The Chaparral mm-hmm. Hearts. And I read something about one of the reviews that there's going to be at least a fifth book. Is that correct?
Yeah, there will be two more.
Okay. All right. So this is a long series. Did you plan out the entire Chaparral Heart series before you got started? Or is this something that has sort of developed as you've gone along?
Oh, I absolutely did not plan it out. In fact, when I was writing the first novel, Waltz in the Wilderness, the advice in the industry that I was hearing was that publishers were not interested in series and they really wanted standalone. So Waltz in the Wilderness was written as a standalone novel. However, by the time I got to publishing stage, the industry had shifted and now they wanted series. So I had sketched out the ideas for books 2 and 3 at the time that I got my contract. And so my initial contract was for 3 novels. And when we got finished with the third one, I talked to my publisher and she was interested in me expanding it. And she said 2 or 3 more. And I looked at my material and considered where else I could go with the series. And I got a really fun, exciting idea for the last 3 books. And I'm really happy to be working on them now.
And it's been a great series. So we're really happy that your publisher allowed you to write 3 more books, and it's good to have 2 more to look forward to for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, this isn't really your run-of-the-mill Western romance. It has a lot of the same characteristics as some of the authors that you mentioned, like Mary Keneally and that, but there are things that make it different. What makes it different from all of those? What sets it apart from other Western romance authors?
Well, not all of them use actual history. I always incorporate parts of real history, real historical events, either small or large, into my stories. And often I will incorporate cameos or even small parts of real historical figures who show up in my stories. So that's one factor. The other factor is that I think I have a different voice and a different take on it. I think I spend a lot of time fleshing out the characters in maybe a deeper way. It's not as, although there is plenty of action, I don't think mine has quite the level of action as, say, someone like Mary Keneally. Hers is kind of like a classic Western go, go, go kind of a feel, which is super fun to read. I think mine's a little bit slower than that. Still a good pace, but like it focuses more on the character arc.
Okay, so a little bit more character driven, which is,
yeah,
like you said, something different for Western romance, but definitely works well within the genre. And in my book, you can never go wrong with a character driven novel at all.
I love character driven stories, although I also love action stories. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of the other authors who have gone before me.
I think if it's well written, it doesn't matter what's driving the story, as long as the story is good.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and not to say that the other authors don't have character arcs or strong characters. They absolutely do.
Right.
I just think mine's slightly different in tone.
Mm-hmm. It is. It definitely is. As soon as I started reading you, I went, okay, so she's a little bit different than a lot of the other writers. And it comes through, but it comes through in a really, really good way and very well done. I enjoy your books very much.
I really appreciate that. And, you know, actually, it's funny because a lot of the reviews for this particular novel have compared me to those three authors that are my, I don't want to say heroes, but like the people I admire, whose writing I admire so much in this particular genre. And it's been such an honor to read those.
I did see those as I was preparing for the podcast and going through what some people were saying. I did see those comparisons. And so that's interesting for sure. The main character in Murmur in the Mud Caves is Biddy, and she has been adopted. And as you mentioned, she gets a letter from her birth sister, Ginny. They both have experienced trauma, and they both have their wounds related to their early childhoods and their lives and things like this. Why do you have this draw to these sort of broken, hurting children?
I think that comes from my experience as a former foster parent and current adoptive mother. I had a long journey through the adoption process, which included about 3 years or so working with the foster community. And I learned so much about what it's like for those kids, both as children and how their childhood affects them as adults. And that just really tugged on my heart. And honestly, my husband and I planned to adopt before we even got married. We said, you know, we're going to have biological children, God willing, but at some point we're definitely going to adopt. So it was never a backup plan for us. It was always this is what we want to do. It's something that's been on my heart, I think, since high school. Honestly, I don't know. God gave me a really tender heart to children in need.
I love that about you. My husband and I have three children through adoption. And you're right. We had always said we'll have some biological children and then we'd like to adopt at least one child. God had other plans for us. He said, oh, I'd like you to adopt all three of your children, which ended up being the best thing in the whole world for us. And you're right. There's just some people who have these hearts. And I love meeting other families who have adopted. And the fact that you are also foster parents, my hat off to you, because it's not an easy job being a foster parent at all.
Definitely not. Not for the faint of heart.
No.
I didn't know that you had adopted your children. That's wonderful.
Yes. Yes. I hear you have a chocolate stash.
Yes, I do. I have a weakness for chocolate. I think I mentioned that in my author bio on my page when I welcome people to my website. I've tried to wean it down in recent years just because I'm trying to be a little healthier now, but you won't probably never see me turn down chocolate.
No. I'm right there with you. So what kind of chocolate can we expect to find in your stash there?
Well, milk chocolate, first of all. I'm okay with white chocolate, but I don't do dark chocolate at all. I like Hershey. I like Reese's. I like Twix. I like Three Musketeers. I like Milky Way. I could go on.
So you're pretty open to anything then, except dark.
Yeah, as long as it's not dark. I don't do the bitter side of it.
Yeah, That is, I had a little bit of dark chocolate yesterday, and it was the sea salt, which is supposed to help with it, but it was really bitter. I thought that was a little bit too much for even for me, but yeah, I'm right there with you with the chocolate.
Yeah. The funny thing to know about me, though, is that I don't like chocolate ice cream. I don't like hot fudge. I don't like chocolate pudding. Well, actually, I don't like pudding at all, but it's so funny because people are like, but you like chocolate. I'm like, yeah, but I don't like it in that form.
Oh. But I do like brownies. Oh, goodness. Here, I thought I'd found a fellow chocolate. What do you call somebody who likes chocolate? We have to come up with a word for, you know, you have a bibliophile and a francophile.
Right.
Chocolate.
There's probably a word.
There has to be something like that. But I don't know. I love chocolate in just about every form except with peanut butter. So I won't have a peanut butter cup. I'll leave those all for you.
Oh, that's my favorite combination.
Yeah, isn't that funny? So we mentioned that there are actually two more books in the Chaparral Hearts series. Tell us about the next one that's going to be coming out.
Okay, so book five will be called Shoot at the Sunset, and it's going to feature love triangle and a mystery. And the love triangle will be between Biddy's younger brother, Preston, and her best friend, Lucy, and a man from the neighboring ranch. And then the mystery involves Lucy's past and what's presently going on in San Francisco at that time and how it affects Lucy's decisions. And so I don't want to give too much more away, but I'm really excited about this one. I think it's going to be a great mix of suspense and Western adventure. And then book six will be about the third sibling, Ginny. We'll finally get to find out more about what happened to her during those 18 years that she was missing from Biddy's life. And we will get to see her adjustment to all of the changes that have been kind of thrust upon her in books four and five.
Wow, sounds interesting. So we do have a lot to look forward to. And when does the next one release?
Book five will be releasing in 2024.
Okay, so you're going to make us wait a little while then, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, with my health issues, things have had to be pushed around. So, yep.
Yeah.
It's going to have to wait until then.
All the better. That gives us time. If you haven't read any of the Chaparral Hearts series, or if you're a little bit behind, you can go ahead and get caught up before the next one comes out. If the listeners would like to connect with you, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, actually, the best way to find me is on my website, www.kathleendenley.com. The trick is to spell my last name correctly. It's D-E-N-L-Y. Or if you want it in a sentence, dogs escape nice little yards. You spell my name right and you'll pretty much find me on the internet. As far as I know, I'm the only me. And I just want to add that if you're looking to get started in the Chaparral Hearts series, I do offer a prequel novella for free in ebook format on my website for those who have signed up for my newsletter. So you have to sign up for the newsletter, then you'll get an email which will give you a link to the KRC Freebie Library, where among lots of other goodies, I have a link for downloading Ribbons and Bows, the prequel novella to Chaparral Hearts.
Oh, wonderful. That sounds great. So be sure to check that out. On the show notes, there will be a link for Kathleen's website. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us. It's been a pleasure as always, and we will be looking forward to the next book next year.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
It is always so much fun to get to chat with Kathleen and to have her on the show. I would highly recommend picking up Murmur in the Mud Caves. You can read it on your own. It definitely can be standalone, but you might want to go back, subscribe to her newsletter, get the prequel, and then read the entire series and be all set for the next one next year. If you would like more information about Murmur in the Mud Caves or about Kathleen, or if you'd like a link to the book, and I will also put in there links to all of the books in the Chaparral Hearts series, then head over to my website, liztolsma.com. take a look there and get a copy of Murmur in the Mud Caves. Next week on the show, I am really pleased to welcome back another returning guest. This time, Stefina McGee returns to talk about her new book, The Swindler's Daughter. And we had just a wonderful time recording this podcast. So it's one I know you're not going to want to miss. I know many of you have told me you really, really enjoy Stefina and have asked for her to be on the show. That's how she came on here originally. And after our first conversation, I knew I had to have her back again. So she is back talking about The Swindler's Daughter. So that will be next week. I thank you all so much for taking time out of your busy days to listen to the show and to spread the word about the podcast. Thanks to you all. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.